Hi. This is our episode with Caroline Gleick. I think this is going to come out on Christmas. So if it does, Merry Christmas. If it comes out after Christmas, if it is no longer Christmas when you're listening to this, still Merry Christmas, but it's for this last Christmas, not for the next Christmas coming. It's always weird when I do these intros alone because, like, I'm sitting in my house and there's no one else around and I'm talking into a microphone, and that's a problem, I think. But, I mean, anyway, I had a great talk with Caroline. I really appreciate her opening up her house to me and letting me come through and just chatting with me for a while. I know she's super busy. I know it's around the holiday season, so everybody that did interviews with me in Utah, thank you. I had a great time being out there. I love just going out and being in these places to do these interviews. It's a good time. It's actually one of my favorite parts about doing this podcast. I apparently have these levels set too high. So if I'm blowing out in your headphones or whatever you're listening in, I am sorry. I'm not very talented in terms of keeping mic levels at a reasonable level. But yeah, we chatted about all kinds of things. We talked about social media, obviously, because she's very good at social media. It's a big part of what her as a brand and as a business does. And like I said, she's very good at it. So we talked about that for a bit. Talked about skiing and how she's kind of grown in the industry a bit. We talked about all kinds of things. So listen to it and let us know what you think. This episode is sponsored by Apparé Headwear. If you are looking for a new hat, if you are looking for a new hat. As far as I know, they have not expanded into other things. But if you need a thing that goes on your head that's not a helmet, then Apparé Headwear can get you hooked up. Just hit up ApparéHeadwear.com. Use promo code OUTOF10 to save 10% off on your purchase. And that's pretty much it. We don't have a lot of sponsors for this episode. We have a couple for the next episode, but I appreciate everybody listening through the sponsors, because it helps us, keep doing what we do, what the sponsors do. And we want to keep growing this thing because it seems to be going well and people seem to be liking it. So on that note, tell a friend to tell a friend, make sure you leave us a review on iTunes. That helps a ton, helps other people find the show. And even though you may think it's cool that you're the only one that knows about this, I don't think it's cool. I'd like to see this, and it has been growing quite a bit. So I'd like to see it keep growing more and more and more. I've been talking for 3 minutes already, and I feel like that's too long. So enjoy mine and Caroline's conversation, and we will talk to you guys soon. Thanks. Bye. So we are here with Caroline Gleick. I said that right?
Yeah, okay. You got it.
Good. Awesome. Yep. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. It's nice here. I haven't been here in like 5 or 6 years. And every time I forget how beautiful Utah is, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is such a beautiful state. It's a nice sunny day here and there's some nice snow outside and yeah. It's such a wonderful time of year.
It's nice.
I love the winter here.
We have like no snow back at home in Western Mass. There was snow a couple weeks ago and in general, the East Coast has been really good, but it's nice to just see snow on the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a much different feeling for sure, especially coming into Christmas. Like Christmas is what, next week?
Next week, yeah.
Great. Yeah. So what have you been up to? What's new with you?
Well, I mean, I've been just really enjoying the past few weeks. I'm done with all my travel for the year. Cool. And it's just been such a big weight of relief to just have a lot of things that I had wanted to do. Now they're done, and I've just been sort of taking it easy, skiing a ton, and just sort of relishing in that pre-holiday buzz.
Did you just ski this past weekend?
Yeah, I've been skiing a lot the past couple of weeks.
Where'd you go?
I went to Elta yesterday, and then I skied in the backcountry the day before that.
Cool.
Yeah.
How was it?
Well, we got some really good snow. I think we got about a foot of snow Thursday last week, so then... Yeah, Thursday was a beautiful bluebird day, and I skied for like 8 hours. It was so fun. And then I took a break Friday. I was pretty tired. And sorry, what was your question? I was just remembering how good of a
that's it. That's what my question was. That's it. That's all we need to know.
So why don't you tell the people who aren't super familiar with you, what do you do?
So I'm a professional ski mountaineer and an adventure athlete and environmental activist.
Okay.
So the ski mountaineering is what I do at a really high level. Okay. And I climb up mountains and ski down them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's seems like a good job.
Yeah, it's really, it's also like being a sponsored athlete and making that into my living involves a lot of storytelling, content creation and production and a lot of things. Gear testing, that's a big part of what I do for my brands. And so there's a lot of other moving parts that go into it. But it's like my dream come true. So every day I get to be out there, it's what I've always wanted to do.
Really?
Oh yeah, since I was a little girl.
That's, I think it's what a lot of people want to do. And then at some point they just like, that dream kind of like fades off for them. Like what made you want to keep going with it?
Well, I mean, that's a good question because it's definitely not something my parents could ever have imagined as a career. Like they're very supportive in some ways now, but my parents, they really encouraged me to go get like my PhD or MD or JD or any combination of letters behind my name. And I went to the University of Utah for my undergrad and I took like 7 years because I took a lot of time off in between. I took like a whole year off in the middle and then I'd always take the spring semester off so that I could ski all winter. And so just working through my undergrad degree, I was like, I have no idea what I want to do except ski. So I was building my ski career. And then when I graduated, I really thought about going to business school. Really? But I mean, it's so expensive to go to business school.
Yeah.
And up until that point, my parents, they're both faculty at the U. So my tuition was really inexpensive.
Right.
But if I would have gone, I was like getting to the point where I was getting too old to be under their like faculty student discount. So I decided not to get my MBA. I thought I could always go back to that later.
Right.
And I decided to keep like my ski career was just starting to blossom and take off. Like I'd had a couple of covers. And so I just decided to stick with that and to see how far I could go with it.
Right. And
yeah.
Clearly it seems to be working out pretty well. You enjoy doing it, right?
Yeah, I love it. Good. I mean, it can be kind of stressful sometimes because there's not a lot of job certainty and just like managing as you grow your business, you know, you need to be more responsible in how you do it. And so now I have like production insurance and business licenses and all these different things. And so it gets more complicated as you get older and as you grow.
Is it weird that you kind of are your business? Like, is that a weird thing for you? Like, I mean, I know it's kind of a crude way of putting it, I guess, but like you are literally your business. Like you're who decides your livelihood to an extent, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting question because like when you are your own brand, sometimes I do feel like as a human, I'm a commodity. And sometimes it's a really disturbing feeling like, am I selling myself? Like, and especially being a woman, and with like the way the snow sports industry has like in the past sort of exploited the female image and for commercial gain. And so there are those times when I'm like, you know, I have an existential crisis.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of different components of my brand.
Right.
And so my LLC is not just Caroline Gleick. It's Big Mountain Dreams.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's my LLC. So I think of it more under that umbrella rather than just my name.
Right. It's not just you. Like you as a person is not just what you put on social media and what you do as an athlete, right? Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
So what, obviously speaking of social media, like that's a big thing right now and you're very good at it, clearly. Like you have a good following, but it's also like it's a positive and a negative, and I know you know that pretty well. Why do you like it? Why do you hate it?
Well, I think what a lot of people fail to realize about social media is that it really is just an extension of traditional media, and it's really an extension of just storytelling.
Yeah.
And so I've always loved being a writer, and that's always something that I've brought as a strong skill set into my career as an athlete. Hmm. And so I really think that Instagram and people really favor accounts that feature good storytelling. Mm. So I really don't think about it as this like big empire or this like nebulous thing of social media. I really think that it's like, it's shorter than a magazine article, you know, like, but it's kind of a fun medium to create for. And especially with Instagram, like it's so visual and it's so photo driven and editing in a little box, you know, I think it presents a cool creative challenge.
Right.
And I really like that kind of challenge. Yeah, of trying to tell a compelling narrative and to take people along. And also not to create what people want to consume, but to kind of like lure them with some like great powder shots or, you know, like some cute lifestyle in the outdoors and then get them to consume a deeper message, whether it's about some environmental issue or a social issue, and just to take that next step and take it a little deeper.
Mm. Do you, is it ever an issue for you where like people aren't taking you as seriously as an athlete because you're good at social media? Like, do you have that problem?
Oh, that's all the time. People really? Say that. Oh yeah. I mean, that's like a classic argument that I think a lot of athletes who are annoyed that, I think one thing I love about social media is that if I was depend is that I can reach such a huge audience. Like I can reach more people than traditional snow sports magazines have ever been able to reach.
Yeah.
And it allows me to tell my story the way I want to tell it. And I think it's a really powerful tool for female athletes because my story and my photos are not filtered through a male photo editor's eyes.
Right.
There, it's my own choice, my own editing. Right. And so I really enjoy that I have that opportunity to tell the story the way I want to tell it. And so I think when people say like, oh, she's only, people say these kinds of things. Oh, she's, her looks are her paycheck, or she's only sponsored because she has a big social media following. And it's just another way for people who are challenged by, I think, especially women who are rising in these sports. I think it's a way to just undermine their accomplishment. And there's, it's a classic thing that happens to people that aren't the majority in an industry.
Right.
Where you're constantly being asked to prove it again. Right. And whether it's through this, like, you know, by saying that I'm only sponsored because I have a social media following.
Yeah.
It's just another way to undermine my credibility, to try to undermine my credibility.
Right.
And I, and when you understand it that way, it becomes a little less frustrating.
Yeah, I guess, it, I mean, it would aggravate the shit out of me. Like, there's no way it wouldn't, like, if somebody was doing that to me. And I think about that, like, all the time. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's just not right to look at it that way. Because there's no way, like, when you first started skiing, you didn't start skiing whenever you started skiing because there was social media. Like, you did it because you enjoyed doing it, right?
Yeah, even, like, my first year of shooting photos with photographers, they were using film cameras. Like, social media for me, like, I've been doing this for a really long time, and with the whole thing about all the different things that people say to try to undermine your accomplishments, like what I've come to realize, like I've tried to reason with some of these people online and what I've come to realize is it's not about you, it's about them.
Yeah.
And it's like a jealousy or some projection of some inadequacy on their part.
Right.
And so you can't try to like understand them too much because you'll drive yourself crazy.
Yeah. You can't please everybody. Like, and some people just want the attention. I think they're the ones that are looking for your attention, right? You're using your platform to respond to their question or their comment or their whatever it is, ignorant or not. Like, people feel some kind of way towards you because you're responding to them, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, another thing is that I majored in anthropology in the from the University of Utah, so I have a BS in anthropology.
Okay.
And what I think about social media, just like on a big scale, is it's sort of an unprecedented step in human evolution.
Yeah.
In the way that it allows us to communicate with one another on a worldwide basis.
100%.
And so I think there will be like in evolutionary psychology and in our whole like, even I bet it's altering our genes. Going to be like Twitter is like a defining moment in human evolution. And people who don't realize that, I think, are just missing the mark a little bit.
Yeah.
It's hard to understand history when it's happening.
Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting, like I was talking, we had the mayor of West Springfield, the town I'm from, on last week on the show. And he was saying, like, we were kind of just talking back and forth a bit about, like, you have with social media this like instant way to interact with somebody. And he's like, he's younger, he's like 33. So you're 32 now. He's going to kill me if I mess up his age and make him older than he actually is. But, the point is he uses social media actively and he's one of the first mayors to do that, especially in our area. So like people have ways to reach out to him and he has people like DMing him about traffic lights and that there's bears in their yards and stuff like that. And he's just like, people don't get that just because it's an immediate way to contact me, it doesn't mean it's the right way. You still have to go through traditional methods and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's still sorting itself out. But I mean, the other thing is that a lot of those people, those naysayers, they really are trying to silence you. And I refuse to let that criticism, like I have something to say and I have a platform to say
it. You are really positive about it. Like if somebody, like if people were, like I watched the Duct Tape Then Beer, is that what it is? Is that what it's called? Right. I watched that video that you put out, that they put out about you just last week.
No, it, and oh, yeah. You it watched it last week.
I watched it last week, yeah. it was great. But like even hearing some of the things that people say to you and like reading the comments and listening to the voicemail, like who calls someone and leaves a voicemail? Like that's ridiculous.
That's so ridiculous. I mean, like, this has obviously taken me like several years to develop my philosophy on it. If you would ask me, right?
Know.
When that happened,
I know. You're so
like
positive right now about it. And it's like, I would be like, I would probably be rip shit. Like there's no way I would be anywhere near as happy about it. Like, I guess you're not, I'm sure you weren't at the time, but.
Well, no, I just was like horrified. I was terrified, really. Like, I mean, for like a couple of years there, I was really terrified. And I just, it sort of changed my personality because I wasn't like a friendly, outgoing person. Cause I was like, really? Who is this troll? Like I knew it was someone that lived in Utah.
Yeah.
And so I was always afraid, like everyone I would see, I was like, that could be the person.
Yeah.
And so it made me really closed off for a while. And I finally feel like I'm just getting back into being myself.
Huh.
Yeah. Like I didn't want to just like say hi to anyone on a chairlift because I was like, this could be that person.
And with that kind of following, like you have, like a lot of people know who you are. So like they might just have something to say to you for no reason. Like they just might want to like take advantage of being nearby you to reach out and make their opinion about whatever you're doing heard, even if it doesn't make any sense or if it's not valid in any way. Like it's just, it's an interesting thing. Yeah. When I heard that, I was like, oh wow, that's
yeah. Like, I mean, getting that voicemail was really devastating for me.
But and you turned it around really well.
Well, I was really glad that we were able to use it in the opening of the film, because when you get something like that, you're like, what do I do with this? Like the cops didn't really do that much. I think eventually they did call him and told him not to do that to people.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a really powerful turnaround for me to be able to like own that and use it for the opening of the film. And then it was just a really powerful healing moment. So for those of you who haven't seen the film, it came out last October with REI, Duct Tape Then Beer. If you just YouTube, Vimeo, REI, follow through, you can see the film.
Yeah, it was great. It was really well put together. I was super, super impressed with how it came out.
Thank you. It was my baby.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, I've had a burning desire to tell my story in a film for so many years. And the Shooting Gallery project was just a really nice conduit in order for me to like tell these other parts of my story.
Yeah.
Like losing my half brother in an avalanche when I was 15, like that shaped my entire adult life. And then losing my best friend Liz in an avalanche 4 years ago.
That's
and
crazy.
So to be able to like weave in some of those things, and then I was just really happy that I had the opportunity.
It was great. It was like an emotional film almost. Like I like felt like my heart kind of dropped for you in a couple of the times because like it was like you feel real emotion when you're watching it. And it was just well put together and well edited. I mean, it was definitely good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
So
I enjoyed it.
What are you working on now? What's next then? If that was your baby, what's your baby now?
Well, I guess there's a lot of different things going. It's like, there's a lot always going on. But I mean, last year, I've always had the dream of going to climb and ski in the Himalayas. And I guess I've always had a dream of being an elite athlete.
Yeah.
And like when I was growing up as a kid in Minnesota, I wanted to be like a professional skier, but that just wasn't going to happen where I lived and in my family with the resources we had.
Right.
We just didn't have someone who could take me to the ski hill to go skiing. And we didn't have the resources to pay for all the like race gear and travel. And So right now, like especially last year, I just was really enjoying being at a really high level with my fitness and my endurance and doing some of these bigger endurance challenges that I've always wanted to do.
Right.
So I did like this crazy ultra running race that goes up down this mountain as many times as you can in either 6, 12, or 24 hours. Called RUFA, Run Up for Air, and it's a fundraiser for clean air. Because like the air quality in Salt Lake is really bad a lot of the winter.
It's a real city. I always forget that it's a full on city. Like it's busy.
There's over a million people that live in the Salt Lake Valley.
That's crazy.
And there's a lot of pollution. And in the winter, it just gets trapped. And my fiance calls it cancer soup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw somebody put up a video last week, like through the valley. I think it was at Snowbird actually. And like you can, on the way to Snowbird, and you can see just like the big haze kind of just sitting at the tree line almost. And it's like, it's a scary thing. It really is.
Yeah. So I did that race and I did the 12-hour version and I did 4 laps up and down Grandeur Peak.
Okay.
And it was about 26 miles and 11,000 feet of elevation gain.
No kidding.
It was really hard, but I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah. I love doing those long days.
Do you you actually enjoy running, huh?
I love running.
Do you really?
Well, I mean, on that, I wasn't really running. I was like, power hiking at times. Sometimes at towards the end, I was hobbling. Like it was painful by then. But no, I love running. I got really into running 2 summers ago. I love it. And it translates really well to ski mountaineering fitness. Yeah. Yeah, especially when you're doing vert like that, going up and down. So I did that race, and then I competed in some ski-mo races.
Okay.
So I did the national championships, which is the powder keg.
Okay.
At Brighton, and my friend and I won the female team national championships.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was super cool. And then I got second in the overall, like in all three races.
Yeah.
And then I went to Switzerland, and I did this huge ski-mo race across the Swiss Alps called the PDG, the Patriot des Glaciers.
It's
a really historic ski mountaineering race. It's like a bucket list item if you're a ski mountaineer to compete. Yeah, it's like basically it's the second half of the Haut Route, which is a really famous like ski tour that you stay at huts, except you do it in a night. You do the second half of it. That normally takes people like 3 to 5 days. You do it in 11 hours or so is what we did in a team of three. It was really hard.
How'd you do?
We finished, which is like really hard to finish.
Right, yeah.
And I just met my teammates. I think we were like 50th. Overall in the men's.
Still though, even to finish is like...
To finish was a huge accomplishment and our time was really respectable.
Good.
Yeah. And it's like high altitude and it was really challenging because I had just met my teammates and they were French and Swiss.
Oh yeah.
So they didn't speak a ton of English. I don't speak much French. I speak no French. By little, I mean none.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just loved having the fitness to be able to do it because like that kind of endurance stuff, I've always been more of a power athlete, but not an endurance athlete.
Right.
And that stuff has really only come to me in my 30s, being able to go out for those long pushes. I love it.
How did you get yourself ready for that? Like you said, like it sounds like you're happy with where your fitness is at right now, right?
Yeah.
But how do you get to that point? I mean, you've been skiing for forever, so clearly it's not just skiing. Like, how do you...
You run a lot, and you train a lot, and you go up and down mountains, and you just, like, maintain consistency.
Right.
Listen to your body. Incorporate some different kinds of workouts in there, maybe some intervals, maybe some strength training. I always like to do, like, some other weird workouts, like some weird Pilates, like, circuit stuff, or just, like, to throw in a few others.
Yeah, mix it up.
But it's really just about the consistency and not getting injured and not overtraining.
Mm.
So for me, it's really just important to listen to my body.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so like a few weeks after that, 6 weeks after that, I ran my first ultra marathon, 42 miles.
Oh, man.
And then 2 weeks after that, I did this really famous, well, I don't know if you've heard of it, the Crusher and the Tusher. It's a bike race in southern Utah, outside of Beaver, Utah. It's a 70-mile gravel race.
I have heard about that. Yeah, actually. So for people that haven't heard about it at all, and to remind me, what is it exactly? It's a 70-mile gravel race.
That this guy put together. He was like an ex-pro road racer.
Okay.
And he wanted to do something that showed off his hometown outside of Beaver, Utah. And so it goes to this mountain range called the Tushers.
Okay.
And they're like these 10 to, I mean, the highest peak there is, I think, around 13,000 feet.
No kidding.
So it's high altitude, 70 miles. It's like 30%, 40% road, 60% gravel.
Right.
And it's got 10,000 feet of climbing.
That's a good ride.
Yeah. And it's just got like this legendariness in Utah, especially. Like, it's just
there's a lot of hype to the event. Yeah.
I guess it's like maybe this is why, like, although I'm like, oh, I don't need to prove myself, but maybe this is like all those Instagram trolls
taking a lot of stuff.
Because I'm like, I've done all these big challenges. Like, this year is a big thing. These were all big challenges for me. And I'm really happy I finished them all.
Right.
Like, I didn't win anything. I mean, I did win the ski-mo thing, but I didn't win any of those other ones.
I mean, but you're doing it. That's a lot of events, and those are all super hard. So, like,
yeah. And then a few weeks after that, I left to climb and ski Choyu, which is the sixth highest peak in the world. I got really bad altitude sickness the first half of the trip. I had to descend. I got high altitude pulmonary edema, and I had to recover. Gosh. And I didn't think I was going to recover. I thought I was going home. But I did recover, and I summited. And then I proposed to my boyfriend on the summit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was like a huge highlight of my year.
I bet it was. It's probably a huge life
highlight.
It's
like a highlight of my life, let's be honest.
Like, that's a huge thing, for sure.
So I got home from that like 2.5 months ago. Wow. And then that, and he wants to go. So the reason we did that is that he's got this big goal for 2019. He was a triathlete.
Okay.
So he was a world champion half Ironman in his age group. Yeah, he's super fast. and he's also a realtor in Park City. So if any of you guys are looking to make a move to Utah, he does all along the Wasatch Front, not just Park City. So his name's Rob Lee.
All right.
Lee Team Real Estate. But he has this goal for next year. Like, I guess I like to think I inspired him to set a big ambitious goal. But he wants to swim the English Channel.
Okay, I saw
ride
that.
Ride his bike across America and climb Everest and get married in 2019.
The same year?
Yeah. So,
oh my God.
So we're trying to figure out how to go to Everest in 2019.
Okay.
And Choyu is like really training for that.
That's crazy. I mean, that is a big goal. That's a lot of big goals.
It's terrifying. I mean, I think the wedding's going to be the
hardest.
Yeah,
I was going to say, getting married is going to be a big enough goal as itself.
But like, I'm so excited.
I'm sure.
It's just like, you know, there's some years aren't as busy and some years are crazy, but I think we can handle it.
Right. How do you schedule out your year? Like, how early do you do that?
Well, we really should have been doing this like last year.
Really?
Scheduling it. Yeah, because fundraising for Everest is like really scary.
Yeah.
It's so expensive.
How do you do it?
I don't know. Maybe your listeners and viewers, like, we're thinking about doing a combination of some sponsorship dollars, some of our own dollars, and we're thinking about doing GoFundMe.
Yeah.
But I hate to ask people for help.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to have to because
otherwise
we won't. It's too much. It's too much financially.
Yeah.
So
GoFundMe is not a bad way to do it. And especially if you have a goal, like, people want to see you. I know I don't want to ask, like, everybody always tells us, like, oh, if you want to make money, like, make a Patreon page, like, and people will donate their money. Like, the people that listen to the show, that way you're not as reliant on sponsors and all this stuff. And like, that's great, but that's asking people from, I don't even like sending sponsor emails. Like, it's miserable. But
it's so hard. So I think we're going to launch a GoFundMe pretty soon here, but, but I want to also create really exciting things we can provide for people who fund us, like Instagram shout out videos, or maybe people can pay and I can make them like custom happy birthday videos.
That's awesome.
I'm going to come up with some creative things. So it's not just asking people for a giveaway or a handout.
Right.
And or I could bring back Tibetan prayer flags.
There you go.
And also I bet I can get some sponsors to throw down stuff that we can donate, that we can, So I think we can do it. It's just that I've been really scared because Everest is scary and 8,000 meter peaks are terrifying. And just like the mortality rates, it kind of terrifies me a little bit.
I bet.
And when Rob first wanted to do it, I was like, no way are you going to Everest. I was like, I hate that idea. But sometimes, like, the things that, I don't know, it's just deeply confronting for me.
Right.
And maybe there was an element of self-sabotage.
Maybe.
Because I think sometimes the things we really want to do, it's like we deny them. We deny ourselves that.
Yeah, I think so.
It's terrifying.
There's a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think people don't want to do because they're scared of doing it, you know? But a lot of times those are the things that you have to do and you're glad you did afterwards.
Yeah,
so I'm sure
for
Everest will be one of those things. Like,
And Choyu is another one. Like, I've wanted to do it for so long, but it just took us a long time to finally pull the trigger on it.
Right.
And so I'm super glad we did. And when we got home, even though I had this, like, I felt like it was a life-threatening illness, I still was like, when we got home, I was so happy we did it. And I was like, I just want to go back.
Right.
I want to do Everest. And Rob was like, I'm not sure I want to do Everest now.
Yeah.
So it took him a few more weeks to just like, it takes a long time to process a big life experience like that.
For sure.
And everyone on social media is like, are you going to post more photos soon? And I was like, it's just taking me, my brain is a little foggy from everything. So it's going to take me a minute, people. Hang tight.
Those things that you have to like dig deep for, definitely like they take a lot out of you, especially in the moment. But like, as soon as you, at least I'm this way, like as soon as you leave something that was extremely difficult, like in the moment, you're like, this is miserable. I hate this. Like, I just want to go home. Like, I don't want to do this.
Uh-huh.
And then you leave and then you're like, oh, that was so fun. Like, I need to go back and do it again. Like
totally.
For a lot of the stuff, especially the stuff that's super scary or like stuff that you have to dig deeper for. But,
yeah.
So
that's a lot. I just give you a lot of information.
That's a lot of information. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know sometimes what to talk about first because
that's okay.
But it's a good place to be. And I like,
at least you have things to do. It's way better to be busy than not be like, than have nothing going on.
Yeah. And I guess I'm also excited about the challenge of stepping into the role of supporting my fiance with his goals, because for so long he would support me on all my shooting gallery lines. And I was always the one who was like, we're going on this trip. We're doing this. And so I'm really excited because like it took me a little while to understand like the benefit of supporting someone else.
Yeah.
I guess like it's like a new kind of maturity maybe that I have now, because I was always like, I'm the star, I'm the pro athlete. I guess I was a little bit self-absorbed. And so I'm excited about the challenge of being a good partner and a supporter for him, because I'm really excited about his project. And it's like when someone else shines, you shine too.
You feel good about it.
Yeah. And just realizing and stepping into a different sort of position with that.
Right.
With my own mentality and headspace.
Right. It kind of expands what you do in a way, yeah. right? Like it's yeah. what he does is an extension of what
yeah.
you have going for yourself, totally. Kind of. So it is, I guess, in a way, like it is still kind of selfish, like selfish,
yeah, yeah, that's
but
true.
It's
no,
still
no, no, it is selfish
selfless,
too.
But I don't know. It's a weird way to look at it, I guess.
Well, it's a, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good, it's just a good thing I've learned about partnership. Because yeah. being a pro athlete and just like it's not always easy to maintain relationships, like yeah. intimate partner relationships.
Right.
And so it's been a nice like evolution for me on a personal level.
Right. How long yeah. have you guys been together, if you don't mind me asking?
4 years.
4 years. That's yeah. awesome. Well, yeah. congratulations.
Thank you. We're so excited.
So we talked a little bit about sponsor stuff. How, I can't imagine you've been sponsored for your entire life. How did you start getting noticed? This was actually an Instagram question that was weirdly worded, so I'm kind of rewording it.
Okay.
So Chrissy, this is your question, but how did you reach out to sponsors? Did they find you? Like, what was the deal when you were getting your first couple of sponsors?
So I think one of my first sponsors was a ski brand, and it was like the local rep that I yeah. was skiing with at Elta, and he was like, you rip, we need to get you on a pair of these skis. Right. So he just gave me some demos
yeah.
with like demo bindings on them, and yeah. I got to use those for the season, and I yeah. gave them back at the end of the season.
Right.
But I mean, that was like such a big day for me. And yeah. it was like 2004, and I was like, I'd never had my own pair of skis. Like I had like right. some old ski swap skis, and before that I had my brother's hand-me-downs.
Right.
So just like to have my own pair of skis,
yeah.
even though I just got to use them, and they had horrendously heavy bindings on them.
Yeah.
Because they were these demo bindings. But it right. was, that was like, so that was kind of one of my first sponsors. And then another one of my first sponsors, like there's this ripping ski patroller at Elta, Dave Richards, aka Grom. He's like head of snow safety. But I would always be at Elta, always skiing around, and he introduced me to his team manager at this other brand. And that was another one of my first sponsors. So.
That's awesome.
And then, like my dream sponsor, I always like had a vision about what kind of athlete I wanted to be. And like environmentalism was always a huge part of it.
Right.
Because I've always been like a nature-loving hippie at heart. Yeah. Like I used to have dreadlocks.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my teens. That's from awesome. 15 to 19, I had dreadlocks. My dad and my parents hated that.
I bet, yeah. Oh.
But I mean, just that ethic of environmentalism and like a love of the planet
yeah.
and the dirt and snow and natural places, that's always been right. like who I am. So Patagonia was always my dream sponsor.
Right.
So I called their team manager every 6 months for 6 years until
Did
they
really?
Finally said yes. And at that point, I had another contract.
Yeah.
So I called my team manager that I was with, and I was like, I'm canceling my contract. I'm switching to Patagonia. And he was like, I understand. When Patagonia calls, you have to take it.
It's that easy, how you just call them up and say, like, that's it? Like,
yeah, I mean, usually contracts have a way you can terminate. They should.
Right, right,
if
right.
If your contracts don't have a way you can terminate them, you should ask them to add that in. Yeah. With like 30 days notice or something.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. So that was like, so I've been with Patagonia for like 8 years, I think.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's been awesome to see their growth. And like, I just love that they're such a values driven, bold, independent brand. Like they're so brave and courageous to like speak out in this like unapologetic way.
Mm.
And so I
they
feel
are really
like
good, and they don't care if it rubs people the wrong
they
way.
Don't care.
They don't care if they lose sales from it. They do things the right way. I mean, I'm a big fan for sure. Like that's
yeah.
I think that's the right way to do it, especially in the way the political climate is now.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing.
I agree.
Yeah, you've definitely done a good job of like aligning yourself with brands that make sense for you as a person and your brand.
Yeah. No, I've always been really particular about that.
What? Why?
Well, I guess there was an experience I had early on in my ski career where,
yeah.
Like early on, I'm sort of like a millennial who started in the Great Recession.
Okay.
So it made me a little bit like, you know, very cautious and risk averse because it was so hard to get a job in 2008.
Yeah.
Like it was grim. I like converted my whole backyard into a vegetable garden because I couldn't afford to buy organic produce.
Mm.
Like, and I am so grateful for my Clif Bar sponsorship
because
without that, like, I mean, it's just nice to have those extra calories. Like
right.
it was hard at the beginning of my career.
Right.
And, one of the experiences I had is I helped build this ski brand. It was like another company bought this ski brand and they were helping to like build it up, especially the women's side of things.
Yep.
And in like one season I was like doing demos everywhere, doing like clinics at shops. I was like building the brand from the ground up. And the next year we built this brand to be the number 2 women's selling ski brand.
Really?
And then at that point, the bigger corporations sold the ski side of the brand.
Yeah.
And they cut the whole ski program and they cut my position, even though we had built it into this huge thing. And yeah. So I guess I've always wanted to insulate myself from some of that vulnerability that comes from these bigger corporations.
Yeah.
And so I like to ski for whenever possible, family owned independent brands, because yeah. I feel like maybe I could make more money with these bigger corporations, but I'd rather have the stability and the sense of family.
Right.
And that commitment, and not to be beholden to the quarterly shareholder profit reports,
yeah.
but to be committed to a longer term vision.
Yeah.
Because building these things, it doesn't just happen in a quarter, it happens in years.
Yeah.
So I just want to know that I'll have some security for my job.
Yeah. And yeah. when you get let go, no matter whether it was your fault or not, it still kind of reflects on you. Like, it's not a great thing.
It's horrible.
I bet. Like, I don't know.
It was devastating. I mean, I built my whole identity around that company.
Yeah.
And it was all my friends.
And you fully commit, especially the first one. Like, I get it. Like, cause we do it with like selling ski brands. Like, we'll fully commit to a brand, then something will happen. And then we're like, well, now we don't have it anymore. Like, we stopped selling it, or we're not doing it because this guy screwed over this guy. And it's like, it's dumb. It's all.
Yeah. I mean, ski sales on the ground, when you're looking at what goes into setting up demos and to like right. getting people on the product, like, it is a labor of love.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we'd be out there in the cold of winter hauling sandbags, setting up these tents, turning screws, like, on the ground, on our hands and knees to get yep. women on these skis. And so when that was all, it's like building a house and then watching it burn. It was
really, that's yeah, like how you
kinda,
felt about
I
it?
Did kind of, I mean, maybe that's dramatic, but
not,
I put
no,
my
I get it,
heart
I get
and
it.
Soul into what I do. And so
yeah.
I would rather get paid less per year and know that I have brands where my voice is heard and I'm building something that's going to last.
I think that says a lot about you too, because there, you could for sure make more money with a bigger brand, but
oh, yeah,
if it doesn't make sense and you're not going to be happy and you don't feel comfortable, then what's the point? Like, that's
yeah.
more important than getting paid more.
Yeah, so. I mean, yeah, there's definitely been some like hard ethical things that have come up in my career like that, where it's put my values to the test. But
yeah.
in the long run, I think it's always better to like stay true to who you are and make less money. Because in the long run,
yeah.
by staying, you know, I hate the word authentic, but by staying,
but you're true to your
yeah,
own values,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
kind of what it is. Like, and yeah. people will call you on your stuff. Like, if
oh,
you're
yeah.
not, like, they'll be so, and it's not about what other people think, but.
Yeah,
they will definitely
really
let you know. Yeah,
and
they might be right.
And sometimes you might have to do it.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
sometimes you might need to take the money and do it
yeah.
and do something that's
100,
not.
We all need to get paid sometimes.
It.
Yeah,
but for the most part, like, I've been really committed to those things, and you know, especially the brands too that give back to the planet and to
right.
people. So I think it's a good, like, it's who I am, and it's been good for my business.
Okay.
Yeah.
So speaking of giving back to the planet, Protect Our Winners is a group that you work with pretty heavily.
Yeah.
How did you get involved and what are you doing now?
So I got involved with Protect Our Winners through, I was dating at the time my ex-boyfriend, Forrest Shearer.
Okay.
And he was one of the first people on the Writers Alliance. He worked a lot with Jeremy Jones on different films back in the day. They did like one of the first like human powered splitboarding movies called
right.
My Own 2 Feet way
yep.
back in the day.
Yeah.
And I guess like, it's weird to say like my ex-boyfriend inspired me, but
okay.
but he's a great guy. We're still really good friends, and he's a business. We know we have a lot of shared sponsors. And so
right.
through Forrest, I got connected with Jeremy, and I became one of the first athletes in the Riders Alliance. And I really helped grow the Riders Alliance, which is like the athlete side of Protect Our Winners.
Right.
Yeah, I've gone to DC with them. I've done a lot of different things with Protect. I've done a lot of Hot Planet Cool Athlete presentations at schools all over the country. To thousands of students.
So is that, so when you go to DC, what exactly are you doing? Like, what's your job there? Is it just to, cause I mean, there is a lot of like taking pictures and social media plugging, but what do you actually do when you're there?
We're lobbying.
Really?
Yeah.
So
we're meeting with our elected officials. We break into groups based on our states and regions.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we meet with our elected officials, our
okay.
senators, our House of Representatives, our congresspeople. We meet sometimes with, like, during the Obama administration, we'd get to meet with the White House,
yeah.
the EPA. We meet with the Department of the Interior. It just depends. I mean,
right.
usually it's like we'll have a few meetings with senators and congresspeople, and then we'll go to other departments.
Right. I imagine there's less of being in the White House now and being, yeah. I mean,
we don't get invited to the White House anymore.
I'm sure, yeah.
It's really hard to get meetings now.
There's not really much for an EPA
at the moment anyway, but I mean, that's a...
But I mean, I haven't been to DC with Protect Our Winters in a few years. I've been going with the American Alpine Club at the Access Fund for Climb the Hill.
Okay.
And then I've also been, I went with the Conservation Alliance.
Okay.
And so those two organizations, we have like really specific policy asks that we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've been really enjoying branching out from just climate change work into more like public lands and other and other issues to like try to promote outdoor recreation and the interests of the outdoor industry.
Right. And I guess that's probably a little more linear too. Like that's something that you can relate to and are more directly influential, I guess, on people, like using the lands and being outside and promoting outdoor recreation. Like these are all things that you do and people look to you for guidance almost. So seeing you do these kind of things is I think it's really good.
Yeah. I mean, being really involved in like in government and as a active citizen, a citizen activist or a lobbyist, like I'm not a paid lobbyist, but I love lobbying. It's really
do
just,
you really?
Yeah, I love it. I love the challenge of trying to sit down with people who have nothing in agreement with you and trying to get them, trying to find common ground.
Do you get a lot of them like just trying to get you to stop, like just trying to get you to stop talking or like is it more...
No,
do you end up switching them over a little bit? Like kind of,
I think every little bit helps. I mean, it's hard to say like we've had these many, like there are always wins.
Right.
Just sitting down and having those conversations is a win.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I definitely feel we are moving the needle on a variety of policy issues.
Good.
Yeah. Just by being present, speaking up, showing up.
Right.
Just by being bodies in the room and having an opinion.
Right.
And I think people have this like really distasteful idea of what a lobbyist is.
Yeah.
But I mean, lobbyists.
I don't think people even
like,
know what that is. Like,
it's anyone who's trying to influence policy.
Right.
Yeah. So it could be like a paid tobacco industry person,
right,
or it could just be a concerned person, a concerned citizen. It could be a lobbyist.
I think that's kind of the problem with it, though, is that it's the same word almost. You know, like it is the same word whether you're like paid and you're just going there to support guns or cigarettes or whatever you're doing.
Right. Or unpaid.
Or you're just unpaid and you're doing it because it's what you want to do. Like it's the same title for two totally different types of people.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. I don't know what that's never going to change, I guess. We're not changing the English language here.
I guess you could call yourself a citizen activist.
Yeah.
Instead of a lobbyist, but I don't have a problem with the word lobbyist.
No.
No, not at all.
All right.
Because like in the world of politics, well, people even have a problem about being political.
Yeah.
And
we're talking about it.
Yeah. They're like, you're being too political.
Yeah.
Like just ski. And it's like, the only reason you're not being political is because you don't need to be. That's like white privilege.
Yeah.
That's
true.
You
but that's a lot of what this industry, the ski industry in general is a lot of white privilege.
And
because
we're gonna
it's,
change that.
I hope so. I hope you're right. Like I'd love to see more because that's the only way we're going to get more people involved in the ski industry is like if other people come in because there's enough white men that go out and ski. Like it's not golf. Like I keep using that comparison because it's
probably pretty similar demographics.
It's similar demographics. Like the same guy walks in, spends the money, doesn't care. So like that's the guy you go to help in, like especially like looking at it from like the perspective of a ski shop employee.
Yeah.
That's the guy you go to because that's the guy that you know has the money in his pocket and like will not care to spend these exorbitant that's not even the right word, but this huge amount of money on ski gear.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing. And I just think that more people can get involved, but there's not really a great way to get more people involved and show people that it doesn't have to be expensive. You can just go skiing and have fun.
Well, I like to think backcountry skiing is really going to help change that.
I agree.
I do think the demographics, I think especially if you look at the broader outdoor industry, the demographics are changing.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting better and I guess it takes time. Like I want it to change like now. And I think a lot of people want it to change now, but it does take a long time.
But I think also there's a huge power that the white men that dominate the industry have to play in that transition.
Right.
And to be aware of that privilege and how it manifests itself.
Yeah.
And to make a more inclusive environment and to invite more people to participate.
Mm.
I think that happens through marketing and advertising effort. It happens through hiring. And there's a lot of different ways it happens down the pipeline. Recruiting, hiring, advertising, marketing, But I think it's changing. I'm really optimistic.
I am too. I think you kind of, you do have to be, because if you're negative about it, there's like there's no way you're gonna A, change anything, or B, anything's gonna change on its own either.
And I've seen there's so many ripping up and coming women, especially.
Yeah.
And just
the
seeing
women's
that
growth
change.
Is incredible in the last few years. Like, and the spotlight is definitely more on women than it is on men, I think, in the last year. Like, maybe not like
maybe
numbers
to
wise
what it used to be.
Compared to what it used to be. I mean, like, I'm not saying like overall, there's definitely way more like ad dollars going into the men's side of things like than there should be, but it's getting way, way better, and that's where the growth
is. It's exciting.
The men's side isn't growing nearly as quickly. I don't think, I mean, you would know better than I would probably. I don't think the men's side is growing as quickly as the female side is.
Well, this gets to another point I have with, with like outdoor gear in general, and I just like have a, I mean, I understand the need for women's specific outerwear and for certain women's, like women's specific eyewear, women's eyes, faces, like I need a smaller sunglass, for instance.
Yeah.
But for skis, like, and hard goods, I'd really like to see more unisex designs.
I agree.
Because I went, like when I started my ski career in 2004, my first ski company was Atomic, and they made the, what was that ski? The Sugar Daddy.
Yeah.
And he made it everything from a 153 to a 193. So the petite girl and the tall guy, they both have a ski they can ski on.
Yeah.
And it's a ripping ski because like at a 153, I don't want a women's flex.
Right.
Like I don't want a watered down version of a men's ski.
Yeah, pink it and shrink it kind of thing.
Like, I do like pink. Yeah. Actually, I do want pink and shrunk. I do.
You want that size?
I want the exact same gear for men.
You want that. You just want it not dumbed down. Yeah.
In pink.
Yeah.
Just don't make it softer. Like, you know, I do like, so when people, so I don't, I think it needs to be like more of a, it's not just a one, I don't know, the conversation about women's gear, you know, people are like, don't pink it and shrink it. I'm like, I actually do want.
You want it literally pink
and
shrunk.
I love pink. Like I do. I'm one of those. And I.
But
think
that's not what that saying means, right? That saying means that it's getting watered down. Like that's what that's, I think. I mean,
I don't know. Like literally.
That's how they describe it to us.
Literally, like, then yeah. So, I mean, but guys like pink too. Like if you take skis, you just make like a pink ski, like they'll sell.
Yeah.
Men wear pink skis and they wear pink bikes.
They wear pink all kinds
and
of things.
And I would love a hot pink ski suit. But so anyway, I want the same like high quality, lightweight. I want the highest end carbon fiber, everything like the sexiest, you know, like most technologically advanced, most expensive product in my size. I don't want it because it comes in my size for a 5'1", 115-pound woman. I don't want to have such a limited array of options.
Right.
Because when you start going down to my size in outdoor gear,
it is
the
limited.
Pickings get slim.
But so that's another point, I guess. And this is the argument that you always hear from the retail side and the buyers and the companies themselves is, are there enough women doing it to warrant these big changes, right? Because you have to make it cost effective.
I don't care.
I agree with you. Like I'm on your side on this. Like I think there should be all this gear. And I think a good way to do it. So I have a side question, I guess, that I'll get to. My brain's moving faster than my mouth probably can ask these questions. But there's a lot of gear. Women's gear is getting better for sure. Like over the last few years. And it's more available. Like they're putting metal in skis, like for women's skis finally. But there's still, it's still not the same as the men's stuff. And there's definite, like if there's 10 men's models, there's 4 women's models.
Right. There's a lot of guys that could benefit from women's specific skis.
But yeah, and that's the problem. So like, I agree and I'll go to sell someone that, but if you tell them it's a women's ski, they're never buying it.
So then why don't you just make them gender neutral?
I agree.
Is what I, and I also make the products like for more than one season. So you don't have this problem of sell through, you know, like make the same bike and sell it for 2 seasons.
See, I agree with that.
If it's a good bike, just keep the same. It would be better for the whole industry.
It'd be better for the industry. There'd be less waste. It would be better, but the problem then is you have, I guess there's an issue with A, discounting, like kind of going by MAP guidelines and like off-season pricing because people expect off-season pricing. And if gears carry through and it's still at MAP, right? Like it doesn't. You're not supposed to be discounting at all, so people aren't getting the better gear at prices they can necessarily afford. So that's another part of the conundrum, I guess.
Well, I think you could like update stuff, but maybe do it every 2 years so you have like different waves of updates coming out. But I guess like I think that there's just a need to have a conversation about like making gear less binary on gender. Because I just think that the whole making of like this, that there's good things that have come out of like women specific gear, but I also think there needs to be more of an eye on like humans gear rather than like his or hers.
Gear that works really well. I think it's and
unisex.
My thing is more about like, it's about how hard you ski and your body weight.
Yeah.
And what kind of skiing you're doing.
Totally.
Like, that makes more sense to me, like, than anything else. Because just because you're a dude, it doesn't mean you need metal in your ski.
Yeah.
If you're 120 pounds, you're 120 pounds. It has nothing to do with anything else.
Yeah. So that's just my rant about women's specific, especially skis. Like, I like my women's specific outerwear.
Yeah.
Like, I need,
that's
you know,
fine.
We have,
I mean, I agree. I don't really
want to
wear. Yeah. I mean, it's, we're different shapes. Like,
we're
I mean,
different
it's just,
shapes.
That makes
like,
sense.
Men's pants probably won't work for me unless they're really stretchy.
I can tell you a women's jacket won't fit me. But
no,
like,
but there's some stuff that you could make it a little bit more universal.
I agree. Yeah.
And that's
face
what,
masks. I mean, there's like, there's women, like, literally, there's women's, it's a couple companies, but there's women specific face masks.
Yeah.
What is, like,
and some of it I find frankly insulting what they offer for women. And like the sizing thing has been a big problem for me in my ski career. As we've gone into the gendered skis, it's become a big problem for me that the most ripping skis don't come in my size.
Yeah.
So that's my rant about pink it and shrink it.
I agree.
And women's gear.
I agree. And you're one of the few that we've had on this show that can actually speak to that a little bit more. So I'm glad. I'm glad you went on that rant a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
The other thing that annoys me is just like when you try to ask a woman to speak for all women. In a way you would never do for men. Like,
no,
the ski
never.
Company's like, what do you think about this graphic? And I'm like, well, there's like 50 million types of women, just like there's, you know, 50 million types of men.
Right.
Or like, there's all these different, not tribes. That's not a good word to use. We don't, it's not good to use that word anymore.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, it's just breaking that habit. But there's all these different subsects of consumers
right.
for women, just like there are for men. And some are going to love pink, some are going to hate it. So don't ask me to speak for my entire gender.
Right. I think a lot of times it's like, and I think guys are, myself included, are super ignorant to what women actually like because we're not great listeners. Like, and I know that's speaking for our, my entire gender, but like, I'm not a great listener. So, and I know a lot of people who aren't great listeners. Mm-hmm. So that's why that question I think comes up a lot, because when I go to shows and I'm buying, like, I have no idea what women like for clothing, what fits makes sense for different. And I know there's women of different sizes and shapes and heights and styles, but I have no idea. Like, it all looks like one big blur to me. So like, I think honestly the fix is to send somebody that's not me there and just get somebody that...
Oh, I can always help you.
Okay,
but,
we'll figure that out.
Yeah, I think listening, all these skills, they can be learned and developed too.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, it's a growing opportunity. It's a challenge. And it's an opportunity to learn and grow. And so I think it's, you know, it's good to have this kind of discourse because it'll help like make our industry better.
I hope so. I don't want to keep here all day. So let's do some Instagram questions that we got. And let me just pull them up real quick. All right. Favorite ski you've ever ridden on? And I guess this without being super biased, like what kind of ski do you like?
Well, right now, I guess my favorite kind of ski, I like a flat tail ski, not a twin tip.
Okay.
And something lately I've been going narrower, but my favorite ski, I guess it just, I'm so particular about different skis for what snow condition, like how deep is the powder. There's this movement ski I have right now that's 100 underfoot and it's pretty straight with like a lot of rocker in the tip and a really rounded tip profile and a flat tail.
Yep.
And I love this ski because I can just, I like a ski I can just charge through anything on.
Mm.
Like I like pretty rockered skis and pretty wide skis for a lot of the time of the year. For a lot
I had
of like
never...
Mid-winter.
I'd never heard of movement skis until you got on them.
Yeah.
So what's the deal with movement? Why movement? Why do you like their stuff?
Movement is a really small Swiss brand.
Okay.
And so they specialize in skis for mountaineering and backcountry skiing. Well, they make a full range, but it's like really, they don't make race skis. That's the only kind of ski they don't make.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like really their whole brand is about, you know, like skiing, not racing. So it's like, I like it because so much of the ski industry is driven by racing. Because they're not focused on racing, they do a lot of cool out of the box things that most brands don't do.
Mm.
And they have this ski, the Alptrack. This ski is why I switched to movement, because it's one of the lightest weight skis. It's carbon and wood. And it's like this special secret formula they won't disclose. And it skis amazing and it weighs like less than 1,000 grams.
That's awesome. And it still skis well.
It skis amazing. Like you can straight line like Wolverine Cirque, like shoots in Wolverine Cirque, like 1,000 vert shoots. You could like, I ski them at the resort.
Really?
And they weigh like my 850 gram skis I rip on the resort with my tech bindings.
That's awesome.
And I get like Strava QOMs on resort
Are
segments.
You serious?
Yeah.
So
it's nice because it's really lightweight. Like every ounce, every gram you can shave in the backcountry as a petite woman will make your day. So I mean, at any weight class, like having a lighter setup is really nice if you want to go deep in the backcountry and right. enjoy it.
Right. Okay.
So I love their skis.
I think that's a good answer for this guy. I think he'll be happy with that.
But I mean, I nerded out and I tested like every brand that made these skis. That made a ski in my size that was like around 100 underfoot, between 160 and 170, that weighed under 1,200 grams a ski.
That's got to be kind of exhausting. Picking one brand to stick with is the thing that I guess I just don't get. Like that's the one way that I'm happy that I'm not a professional athlete, that I can just like pick and choose whatever I want off the wall, like any given day. How do you pick, I guess? Like
it was just like a specific parameters. Like I also wanted a Skimo race ski. So a brand that had that and a powder ski, and like they have this ski called the Go, which is more of a beefier construction and it'll charge at the resort, and it's just got a really progressive modern shape of the skis with a lot of rocker. So they really have like every kind of ski in their quiver, and I really love how nicely they're made because the Swiss skis, like the P-Tex bases, are just like this super high quality P-Tex that you never get a core shot. And I just appreciate like the craftsmanship of the skis so much.
Right.
Like I can feel it when I ski. I can feel it how they wear. Like I'm pretty hard on my gear.
Right.
And like, you know, those beautiful, colorful cutout bases?
Yeah.
Those are not what you want in the backcountry. Like you have to wax them all the time. You get core shots galore.
Yeah.
Like I don't want that on my bases.
The D-Lam, yeah.
I want like the race grade, the highest grade P-Tex.
Yeah.
So I don't have to.
Yeah.
So they'll last forever.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the way
I need something bomber like where I'm going in the mountains.
Where is the other question? Oh, Danny wants to know, I am a 15-year-old skier, and I want to be a pro athlete as well. How can I grow my social media following?
Well, I think that you need to learn really good communication skills and practice your writing and your photography, and like having a good background, like stay in school. And I think college really helped me have a lot of, it also gives you something to fall back on. So go to college, get those critical thinking skills and develop your work as a writer, because it really comes down to having good writing.
Right. And storytelling, like
good
you said.
Good storytelling. Yeah.
Any interest in an East Coast ski objective? Asking for a friend, says Ski the Whites.
I've done a few ski trips to the East Coast.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've skied in New Hampshire and Vermont. I did like a ski mountaineering trip there one time.
Really?
Yeah, and I did some like ice climbing routes and ski mountaineering routes. But I mean, I really, like we skied Huntington Ravine.
Yeah.
And did this super classic ice climb. And then we skied this amazing, we skied up this couloir or gully, as you'd call it.
On the east,
to this ravine. And we'd skied up this ravine into this ice line called the Green Chasm, Mount Webster.
Okay.
And it was like one of my best days ever.
Really?
Yeah. And then I've skied Stowe and I've skied Jay Peak and skied Stratton. So I love, like, and I might go to the Adirondacks this year.
All right, cool.
But Tuckerman's is like, I still haven't got Tuckerman's.
Really?
You should.
It's like a classic.
It's such a classic.
It's not that difficult. It's not that crazy, but it's so much fun. It can be difficult for sure. It is cold, but especially like the big time to do it is in the spring.
I know, like
that's
April.
Everybody does it. And it's super nice, but it is packed. Like there are so many people out there.
And it's condition dependent.
Yeah.
Because you guys 100%. Get those crazy rains. Like the weather there is brutal.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of respect for East Coast skiers and East Coast climbers I mean, the conditions there, there's so many great legends of the sport of ski mountaineering and skiing and ice climbing that come from the East Coast.
Yeah, the Ski the Whites group that actually asked the question is, I mean, that's the kind of go-to
tour group up in the White Mountains. Like, so if you do end up going out there, okay, those are the guys to hit up. Yeah. Andrew Drummond's the guy. Like, those.
No, I will keep going back there. Like, I had some of the best powder skiing in my life at Jay Peak.
Yeah, Jay's awesome.
I love Jay.
It's beautiful. It's,
I love it there.
We'll see how, yeah, I mean, they've got that new, they've got like a water park and stuff there now. Oh, yeah. It's like, it's a little more kid friendly, but they definitely have some of the best skiing on these coasts.
Yeah. And my eyewear sponsor, Jilbo, is there.
Yep.
So I would definitely need to go and visit them. In, I think they're in Williston. Is that near Burlington?
Somewhere near there. Yeah.
They're,
I don't
near
know.
Burlington. I can't remember the exact name, but
I'm pretty sure it is Williston because we are a Jilbo dealer. So.
Oh, cool.
So
awesome. Thank you.
It's well.
Oh, I have a really exciting goggle project coming out with them.
Do you really?
Yeah. All so right. We'll have to keep in touch about that.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll,
stay
we'll
tuned.
See. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's all I have for Instagram questions for now. Those were some of the best ones. So,
cool.
Thank you for doing this. Do you have anybody you want to shout out? Anybody you want to talk about?
I'd love to give a quick shout out to my sponsors.
Yeah, go ahead.
Takine Footwear, Patagonia, Jilbo, Cliff Bar, Lakey Poles and Gloves, Movement Skis, and Pret Helmets.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Those are some good brands. It's a good lineup.
Yeah. I love the brands I work with. Like, literally they all feel like family to me.
That's what you want. I mean, you don't want to feel like it's a job. You want to feel like you're, like, it's family. I mean, that's about as good as it gets,
it's
I guess.
Really, it's like all people I'd love to go on trips with, and I love working with them. So definitely check out those brands. And
where can people find you on social media?
At Caroline Gleich, CaroLineGleich. It's like with a G. It's a tough one, but you know, I've embraced it.
Awesome.
It's unique.
It is. Yeah, I know. I had a hard time with it at first too. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. That was our episode with Caroline Gleich. Be sure to check her out on social media. If you are one of like five people that don't follow her on social media, she is great. I really appreciated her taking the time out of her day to talk with me. I really enjoyed the conversation. It's interesting to talk to different people that have different perspectives on all these things and that kind of differ in the way that they do things in the ski industry. If you have any questions or guests that you would like to see going forward, hit us up. It's just adam@outofpodcast.com. And we'll try to make it happen. Obviously, we're trying to stick to outdoor sports related guests, but we're actually going to start to diversify that a little bit more and just people that I know and that I've kind of met through the industry. So still related, and we'll always try to tie it back. But I think we're going to kind of expand what we do here a little bit. Again, if you could leave us a review on social media or follow us on social media, but if you could leave us a review on iTunes or whatever medium you are listening on, that helps a ton. We love to hear your feedback, and it helps other people find the show. So the more you can do that, the better. That's it. Thanks, guys. Bye.